And so if you're in the business of harvesting energy, and if you cut yourself from the sun, you just cut yourself from the very thing that you're trying to harvest. So it's like,
you got a losing battle.
Yeah. Like,
there seems to be a deficit of conversations around the whys of living away from the convenience of town, spending precious time on trying to grow your own food when you can just buy it in the shops. And if choosing this lifestyle really is making a difference on our characters and that of our families. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast. We are passionate about and love having conversations on what impact truly experiencing country living, true education, and agriculture can have on our lives. We hope and pray that by us sharing these conversations with people from all different backgrounds and experiences, that you can feel equipped from the practical advice and inspired by the stories to continue or pick up where you left off.
Welcome to our first episode of The Basics. We're going to be interspersing these between other testimonies and experiences similar to what we've been doing already. In this series, we'll be giving short, concise insights from our experience into some of those topics that you might have had questions about before.
Yeah, and a unique aspect, I think, going forward and talking about these things is that we can kind of have a look at gardening and country living from the perspective of filling the pantry or usefulness of self-sustaining. So I think there's a slight little shift in the mentality that's happening when we're moving from the city to the country in terms of our purpose in pursuing gardening or any activity that we do. And I think it'll be interesting to bring in that perspective when we discuss some of these things, like where to choose a garden, how to choose it, how to grow, how to fix soil, how to, et cetera.
Yeah. So having like a purpose behind why we're even doing what we're doing, right? And reminding ourselves of what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in that purpose kind of is giving us context for how we answer the problems and go forward. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm keen.
I think that's also like both of us are coming. We do have a bit of background in that context of making a garden for a purpose, not for like therapy. And I was at a period in time when we were making gardens at home as a family, just for like the garden patch where we could go and play, really. So you could compare it to a sandpit rather than a productive pantry filling activity.
And I think there is a place for that, like especially if you have young children, like allowing them just to play in that space. But yeah, what we're specifically wanting to talk about is more of how can we make this the most productive, the most useful asset really of living in the country.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about choosing a garden location. Like, what do we need to consider and some thoughts around that? And so we have a few stories and a few experiences that we'll share. And I know Shanna's got a story to start us off that she's quite passionate about. So tell us, Shanna, how did choosing a spot for your garden in your home, how did it go?
For those who have listened to some of our previous episodes, we did share some of our experiences growing up. And I moved to the country when I was 12. And like, that was a big focus of ours, was country living, sustainability, homesteading, all that sort of stuff. And so our focus was, when we moved to a bigger property, was to grow our own food. Not that we hadn't had a garden before, but definitely not able to have to the size and capacity that we could when we moved to 87 acres, when you've got a lot more room where you can play with. So yeah, we actually bought a property, a block of land without a house built on it. There was a slab there, but not the house built. So before we started building the house, we knew we needed to be growing our own food. So that was actually the first thing we did. We planted about a dozen fruit trees and put a fence around a garden area so we could start growing things and have things growing by the time we could move out there. But we just chose a garden spot just across from the house, or the slab at the time. And it was like a pretty decent sized garden. It was bigger than we'd ever had before. Like, the house that we were in before had a small like box garden. So yeah, hardly anything. We grew strawberries and asparagus in there. So it was bigger than that. And so I'm like, in my mind as a child, I'm like, this is going to be great. We can, you know, grow tons of food. There were a couple issues with that spot that, reflecting on, I see now, but at the time we were just gung-ho and excited to get started. So yeah, it was on a little bit of a hill, which meant the water mainly just rolled straight off it. The soil was really clayey. And because we were still clearing the property, there was a lot of lantana. I don't know if you guys know about lantana, but it can be one of the worst weeds out. very frustrating and annoying. So there's lantana and trees around it. So it ended up being in the shade most of the day, especially in winter. Like, during summer, it would have a couple hours of sunlight, but in winter, like, it was in shade all day, which is not always the best for growing food.
It sounds like a perfect disaster right up to this point.
Perfect disaster. I mean, I'm kind of painting it like that. At the time, we were just excited. So we didn't even think about those details. Just like, hey, let's grow a garden.
We don't see the facts. We don't see the details that are actually making this fall apart or will make it fall apart.
That's why foresight is an amazing thing, but sometimes we don't use that to the best of our ability. Anyway, I remember like doing things in there, and we spent a lot of time weeding it and not really getting much produce out of it. I don't know if you can relate to that, Ian, but you can spend a lot of time weeding something and the plants don't actually grow. The weeds grow, but the plants don't grow. So that was my experience at that property, like thinking back as a child, how things happen. So I was like, it's because we don't have a plan written out. You know, we don't have, you know, what things we need to plant as seedlings before spring and what things we're going to plant in the ground, where we're going to plant them and how to make the space most efficient. That's why we're not getting food out of this garden. And so I spent, I don't know, a winter planting the garden and what we were going to put where. And it looked really nice on paper. And so it came to the time where I grew the seedlings and the last frost had come and gone, and I planted them out in the garden and it didn't really go to plan. They kind of just stayed really small and just didn't grow like they were meant to. They seemed very stunted in their growth. And I was definitely very discouraged by my efforts, and I thought that gardening just wasn't for me. It wasn't until a couple of years later, though, when my mum and brother decided to do a market garden on our property. And they picked a location with full sun. They brought in mushroom compost to build up the topsoil, and they built a complete irrigation system for consistent watering, that I realized that gardening actually could work on our property, but only with the right conditions.
Yeah, like so many people I've talked to are like, oh, gardening's not for me. I can't do that. I've got a black thumb, not a green thumb. I kill everything. And it's like, hang on a minute. What have you done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I literally thought that.
What have you done? What's given you such a bad experience? And there's always a story.
Yeah, I remember around that time, a friend came out to our place, an older friend, and she just could grow anything and everything wherever she was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't grow anything, honey, die. It's not working for me. And she's like, oh, I'll give you 3 simple steps and, you know, you'll be able to grow anything. And I'm just like, yeah, right. Like, I can't grow anything. And she's like, you just need sunshine, water, and the right nutrients, and you'll be sweet to go. I'm like, what? Really? Huh? That's simple?
It's simple until we realize what does it look like to have the right water or the right nutrients or the right sunlight?
Mm. I thought watering with a watering can once a week was enough, but apparently not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, sometimes we water, and I remember discussing with a client was asking, why is my trees not going right? And I'm like, and he said, I've just finished watering them. And we said, okay, let's go and have a dig around. And we dig around the tree and, well, the soil's not wet. You watered. I agree. The water physically left the hose and went in the vicinity of the tree, but the soil is not wet.
It just rolled straight off.
It just rolled straight off. And there's all sort of things that happen that kind of cause that. But anyway, you know, and then they went and was like, oh, okay, we've got to break this soil up and we've got to make sure that the water's actually going into it. Ah, okay. Now it's wet.
It's gold when you realize that, hey.
So I think like we can grab more on that, like pulling some more principles out of this story in terms of like water. You know, what happens when it rains? Like, is that garden filling? Is the water moist afterwards? Like, can you go and dig and after you irrigate or raining? Does it either one? You know, does it actually?
Is the soil moist?
Is it moist? Exactly. If it isn't, obviously something's not going right.
Which actually comes back to your soil type as well, right? Because for us, it was very clay soil. There was hardly any topsoil. You couldn't even use a digging fork to break it up, sort of thing. It was that sort of situation. And so, of course, where is the water going to be going? Like, it's going to be running down the road with everything else.
Yeah. Well, how is it going to enter that? It's going to need to sit there forever. And you said there's a slight slope and that's it. It's not sitting there. It's going. So it's got to really be broken up so that it enters and is soft enough to do that. So then it comes down to breaking it up and then putting something in it so it doesn't go back to a brick, because, you know, you can break up a soil and make it really fine and really nice. And then when the water goes on it, it just resets. And then when it dries, it resets to exactly and precisely the stuff that you had before, the same concrete, the same brick. If you don't put breaking something soil up is a great opportunity to add something into it,
mm.
but it, It's not like if you don't take the opportunity to put something in, some organic matter, some nutrients, some compost, some something, the opportunity hasn't actually done anything. You haven't used that opportunity.
It might look a little bit different, like a little bit turned over, but it's going to go back to what it was before, right?
Right. Exactly. I remember with Dad, like really, really, really young, we went and got some soil and we mixed it up really fine and made it really nice. And then we put it back in the hole and it's like, oh, that was really nice soil. Well, it just returns to its normal state.
Just mixed around a bit.
Exactly. Just mixed around. So really it's the important state is what does it go to after you leave it?
And I think for us, like when we ended up working towards a market garden model and we brought in mushroom compost, Mum was like, I'm not even going to try, you know, starting from scratch and just trying to turn the soil and add things slowly. Like we're just going to start with completely new topsoil. So yeah. Sometimes when it's that bad, it is a useful thing to do, but obviously building up the soil is, yeah, the yeah. ideal.
So, and that's a concept like there, do we need to consider soil when the choice of soil, when we are choosing a spot for a garden, like, is that an important decision? Should I make the decision of the location based on soil? And actually, we've got to say no in some ways. No, because any soil can be fixed at a small scale. You know, when we're coming in a gardening context, we're at home and we want a small garden. We want 100 meters squared, 200 meters squared, you know, even 300 meters squared. That's a big garden already. We can fix, like that can be fixed, even if it's horrible, miserable, and just downright nasty. That can be fixed. You know, at worst, you're going to end up with a slightly raised bed of imported soil of some description or compost, right?
Mm.
But the bigger the garden gets, the harder it is to fix really big issues. So then you're starting to look at the soil and say, well, hang on a minute. We kind of want the good spot because I want to fix less stuff.
Yeah.
I want to fix less problems.
I can make it easy as possible for yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. And I remember after coming out of uni and in ag school, and it was just like, and learning that all things are possible and all things are fixable, I had this mentality of, yeah, all things are, you know, all can be fixed. And I went to a farm suitability, like landscape suitability assessment. It was like, yep, the soil's got this problem, this problem, this problem. Yep, all of these have ways to fix them.
Hmm.
Oh, but are you really willing to put the effort in at such a large scale or at a larger scale to fix those things? Hmm. So it's a lot easier to choose a place which doesn't have a lot to fix.
Yeah,
if it's of any size.
And like if you do have a big property and there's lots of options, yeah, look around for the best spot. Doesn't have to just be the thing that you first see and the space that's first cleared or whatever. Look for the place with the best soil. And like on the topic of soil, there are cheap things on your property, different things that you can add without needing to go to a lot of expense as well, right? I remember things that we used a lot of was horse manure because we had horses, and like the leaf matter. So what it's called.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you go under the tree, if you've got lots of trees in your property, you go under the trees and there's all this soil that's, you know, decomposted and is perfect and ready to use anyway. So adding that to the right spot can be really helpful.
Yeah. You guys being in your New South Wales or Queensland part of the world can do a lot of that down here in Victoria. If I go under a gum tree and try to take the soil from underneath it, I will be very, I will not run into the same experience. I will make
that's
my garden
point.
Waterphobic and it won't grow at all.
So are there more places you can or can't get it from?
Yeah, it's more like a thing with eucalypt trees and oil, or pine trees and their creation of oils. So they have a lot of oils in them, and so therefore all of their materials that they dump below them will have oiliness, which will, an oil repels water, and so when you put that on your garden, you have this water problem again.
Mm.
You have this water coming, dropping down, and they're not going in. And it just looks like droplets of water on a duck.
Hmm.
Yeah. So as soon as you have a deciduous tree, or like a European tree, or you have a fast growing shrubs and all of those kinds of fast growers that are low in oil content, which is the typical of the New South Wales, Queensland, that's great. That's already like organic material that you can use in the plentiful.
That's really cool. It's really logical, but that's really not the first thing I would have thought of. So, and I think like we're going to hopefully go over like soil health and stuff later on as well. So we don't need to go too deep into soil in general, but it's just definitely something to consider when picking a location for a garden.
And the sour experience that comes out, for example, in your situation is not so much from, I mean, it's from the, you know, there's a problem, but not knowing how to fix it.
Mm.
And so even if there's a problem with the soil that you've chosen in the location that you want to make a garden, that's fine. The problem that really needs to be addressed is giving you some tools to then how to fix those problems so that that doesn't give you a sour experience and lead to the end of your gardening dream.
Gardening career.
Yeah. I think back on water, just to point out another thing, you know, like what happens when it rains again? Like, does the water sit? Does it stay there? Well, that's not good. Like, it's really good to know what happens when it rains really heavy, like in a storm. And you can see where the water sits, and you don't want plants right there because they don't want to drown. It's very simple. They don't want to drown. So
we don't want to drown. They don't want to drown.
Yeah.
Let's look out for them.
Exactly. They want water. They want it consistently. They don't want to drown in it. So we want that drainage. So an area where water builds up is not going to work.
So what would you say would be the contributing factor for why it's staying there?
It has nowhere to go. Or if you have a heavy clay, well, it's just, you basically got a dam on the surface, you know? So,
yeah. So making sure it has somewhere to go, whether, yeah, it's clay soil or whether it's just a little hole thing that needs to be drained out. Yeah.
Like I've got sandy soil. I don't understand the concept of puddling or water lands and goes straight through as if it's not there. My problem is holding on to water. I dry out too quickly. So I need to water a lot. Frequently. I shouldn't say a lot. We irrigate frequently with less amounts of water. Whilst in the clay, I can put less water out less frequently.
Because it holds it longer.
Because it holds it. It holds it. Yeah.
Cool. So we've got water, we've got soil, we've got what sort of things we could add to our soil to change things. Are there any other sort of considerations we should be thinking about when we're choosing a location?
You mentioned sun. Really big one. Wrong spot, no sun. That's just a disaster. It's just like it's defying the basic physics of what you are doing when gardening or when growing absolutely anything. Like the only the plant, like its entire role in life is converting energy from the sun into energy in the form of a fruit or something that you eat in order to energize yourself.
A little bit better. Like we were hoping that when we cut more trees down, then the sun would actually hit that place. Like we were in the throes of clearing when we chose where to put the garden. And so we didn't just choose it because, yeah, like we did think it needed sun. We knew it needed sun, but in summer there was some sun there. And when we cut down more trees, hopefully there'd be more, but there were some still really tall gums that blocked most of the major sunlight we needed, especially during winter, which we really couldn't foresee unless, you know, you'd planned how many trees you were cutting down at the time or like how much we were allowed to clear. Anyway.
I would just say, really practically speaking, I know the beds in my garden which have the most sun exposure and they're the ones that are growing the best. That's just as simple as it gets. And I think there's an exception to that. There's an element of, can you have too much sun? Think about if you don't have water, sun starts to become a stress. If you're not feeding the plant and it doesn't have water, sun is now no longer something that it can harvest energy from. It's now a stress factor. And so that's when you can have, in a sense, too much sun. And then I think there's still some vegetables that like the cooler climates. And so then like a lettuce or something, I guess this is a more of a Victorian concept perhaps, but during, you guys use protected tunneling as well. But in Victoria, like we get a really hot 40 degree day, or by the time you go into the sun, it can be like nearly 50, right? That's horrible. Like what lettuce wants to grow into that? And lettuces love their cool. And so in summer, in the middle of that heat, it does make sense if they had less sun. Mm-hmm. They can do with half a day sun.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this week as well, the concept of lilies. I know it's not food, but the idea of how lilies need shade, right? They need to be like not in the heat of the sun all the time for them to grow and be beautiful. And yeah, just that point as well. Let me just bring it around while I can, of how, you know, we also in our own lives, we need to be careful where we're putting ourselves, right? Yeah. Like this isn't just the plants we're thinking about. I mean, we are thinking about the plants, but the choice of moving to the country, it's making the best decisions for where we should be as well. And yeah, it all just ties in together. And, you know, what's best for our spirituality, for our relationship with God, for helping other people, for growing.
The position that we're in will affect how well we grow. And it is exactly the same for a plant. And it's the same for us. Like those good things, the sun is a good thing, but too much of a good thing before we're ready for the good thing, it kind of is a stress. And it's, yeah, and that's part of the whole theme of country living. It's part of moving to a place and locating ourselves in a way that's actually best for us.
One of the other things that kind of was mentioned, kind of not, was that the garden we planted was close to the house for convenience, which is that a good thing or not a good thing?
Well, if you're like our family, convenience is everything. We got a big problem, and that is that there's produce in the garden and yet the food in the fridge gets eaten first.
Yeah.
In the sense that life is so busy and you got to go to work or you got to all the rest of it. When's this stuff going to magically get from the garden into your plate? You know, there's this logistic here that I think we really need to consider. The logistics, you know, when we go and fill our pantry, we go to the shop, we buy, we put product from shelf in basket. And what I want to emphasize is all these steps and all the effort that goes to it. And shopping becomes a chore, like ask anybody who does shopping. It becomes a chore. And the thing is, your garden and harvesting out of your garden can become exactly that chore. And I think that's for us has really been a bit of a problem. Growing the stuff happens to be 50% of the job. Like it's just a small percentage. Like it's half of it, you know, like harvesting it is literally the other half of the job. So to go to the garden, pull the carrot out of the ground, wash the carrot, put it in something, carry it to the house, put it in the fridge, put it in the pantry. It's literally work. And I think we found that we harvest stuff, and the idea that you can go and harvest before every meal is fiction. It's just fiction.
I mean, it's a beautiful idea.
It's romantic. It's non-practical. And sure, you'll go and harvest your herbs, you know, if you want to harvest them. But say you want to go and harvest your herbs before every meal. Are you going to walk 300 meters for your herbs?
Realistically, no.
The dry herb suddenly looks so tempting at 9 o'clock at night or whatever exotic hour that you're preparing and who knows what. Okay, I hope you're not cooking at 9 o'clock. But, you know, the life.
Our right. lifestyles get busy, right? And so, yeah, keeping that in mind is a massive thing. And, like, I'm even just thinking of where I live at the moment. Over the last year, I grew a couple of things in the garden, not anything major, but enough to be able to harvest and enjoy that produce. But yeah. Same thing, like, it's at the back of the house, so I don't see it when I drive in. I don't see it when I walk into the house. And so, like, even to remember to water it was a struggle because, like, it's not there. I don't see it. I don't think, oh, yes, yep, I should use stuff from the garden or I should go water the garden. I don't think unless I set an alarm or I make myself schedule it into my day. So it's a real, real concern, real, real consideration.
You want it kind of close.
But with the sunshine and with the water and with the other important things.
Yeah, all of those things together, you know, and so that you can literally do your shopping run. If you do your shopping run twice a week or 3 days a week, whatever, you are now going to have to do a harvesting run to the garden. Pull those tomatoes off the vines, put them in a box and put them in the house so that they're ready when that meal comes. And same with the carrots and same with a few things. And you fill your pantry, quite literally.
Yes, that's what we want, right? Filling our pantry from the garden. Lots of potatoes, lots of sweet potatoes, lots of pumpkin, lots of tomatoes. It's high on my list.
Yeah, we'll definitely need to have a conversation about how do you plan a garden to fill a pantry. But anyway, that's another day.
Yeah, so this is not the last conversation we're having on basic topics like this. I mean, this isn't even basic. This is going into a lot of things. So
what do we say so far? We need that drainage. We need that sunlight.
We need a place that the water's coming from. We haven't really talked about that, but kind of implied with the rain, with irrigation, with some sort of watering.
If you're carrying the water with a watering can,
it's going to get old real quick.
Real quick. If you disrespect yourself and your time so badly and you get such a limited return for your effort, you will soon want to stop. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And if you be as efficient as possible, you will actually enjoy the outcomes more and more, and therefore you'll be more rewarded by it, which means you'll want to do more of it. It's that simple. And so if you're doing something that's super inefficient it's just going to get old fast.
Mm. Yeah, efficiency is really something to consider, especially when you're trying to grow enough to feed yourself and your family.
Yeah, and do the rest of life as well.
Mm.
All right, we'll add another point about airflow and aeration. When we're choosing a spot, what happens when it's super windy or there is no wind? There is no airflow. I think in spots where there is no airflow, let's go to that extreme first, you'll get moss buildup and mildew, moisture buildup. And so we would describe that as a location that's inducive to disease, basically. So you want a bit of flow. You want a bit of airflow to get rid of that stagnancy.
Mm.
I know, like, even at our place, we started off with a little of that, and you could go to the soil and you could see moss growing on top of it. Like, what's going on here? We're on top of a hill. The last thing you would think is that we've got air stagnancy. But the moss showed otherwise. There's some aeration that would like a little more. So the moss disappeared after a while.
So you were able to do something to change that?
Well, there's a few less trees around, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
we've cut a fair few and we've opened up the place quite notably.
Yeah.
I think when I started, I was like, I just really want a garden and this is the only space I've got. And then once we made it, we were like, well, all these trees that were really nice suddenly became second priority. So yeah, there's that whole tree relationship there that we'll talk about. But if there's no airflow, you're going to have disease. That's really where it's at. And if you have too much wind, just think of it like this. Every time that plant bends left and right, instead of putting energy in growing the tomato or growing the fruit or whatever, it is now spending that energy to strengthen its trunk and its structural stuff and not putting that energy into growing what you want.
I really like that analogy. That's really cool. Like, we don't normally think about it. Hey, we're just like, is it growing fruit or is it not? It's like, no, the wind actually is determining how much energy it has to put into strengthening itself and all that.
Yeah. So the highest yielding tomatoes are the ones that are hanged on a string. Why? Because they've done nothing in life to support themselves. They've done nothing. And so they can spend all this extra energy that you've saved them.
Pumping in the fruit.
Exactly. And that's the same with a field of potatoes or anything. If it's being howled down and beaded with wind, that's going to be a stress and that's going to use up energy. And, you know, there's obviously things that are super sensitive to that, like kiwis or avocados or something, right? Passion fruits, whatever. There's certain plants that are more or less sensitive to howling.
Well, that's awesome, Ian. It's really good just to reflect and think on some of these things from, I guess, our experience and different stories that we both have in mind. But yeah, just realizing that where we choose for our garden is actually going to impact things, whether it has the right enough amount of water, whether the water rolls off the soil or stays in the soil, what type of soil there is, how much sun it's getting, what sort of airflow we're getting, and also like just the practicality of like, is it convenient? Are we actually going to use what we're growing? So yeah, overall, there's lots of considerations to keep in mind when choosing the best place for your garden. Yeah, look at the options and find the best place and I'm sure you'll see amazing results. And that's the thing, like, we can be detectives and you will be able to succeed. Look for those simple things. It's not complicated. And I think that's what, when I first gave up on gardening, I was like, I can't grow anything. I thought it was complicated. But when I realized now and other experience since, it's not complicated. It's just about knowing the things that we need to be considering. And so, yeah, we just really hope that you guys, as you are embarking on this journey, or if you already have started on this journey and are having troubles, that this can be of benefit to you and you can be a detective and find those things that you need to improve to help your garden succeed and do the best it can.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for joining us today.
We would love to hear from you, your experience, like what happened when you made your garden and what put you off gardening for life. And most importantly, what brought you back. But if you want to even like record it and send us a little audio of you describing your little story, we'd love to have it. We might even share it.
Yes, do it. Email it through to us at podcast@cultivateconference.com.au. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to the Cultivate Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you find us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our mailing list by the links below so you don't miss out. And if you have a moment, we'd love it if you could leave a review or tell a friend. See you next time.